Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
This is Jack. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 14th, 2020. County. Judge delays giving judgment in DA's suit. Trotter gives attorney extra time to review information. By Caitlin Randall, CRANDLE at MRT.com. The judge presiding over the hearing for the lawsuit filed against Midland County Judge Terry Johnson by District Attorney Laura Nodoff did not give a judgment Thursday, but instead gave both sides extra time to review new information. In the suit, Nodoff argued that Johnson was late in filing his opposed county budget. Ector County Judge Stacy Trotter is presiding over the hearing in Midland County 441st District Court. He was assigned to the case after Midland County Judge recused himself. Trotter made two rulings on motions filed by Johnson's representation, County Attorney Russell Malm. The first of those rulings was a motion to dismiss, which Trotter denied, according to Malm. The second ruling was on Malm's response to the lawsuit, in which he argued Nodoff did not have standing to file a suit over the proposed county budget. Malm said the judge ruled Nodoff does have standing. From there, Trotter heard oral arguments from Malm and from Nodoff's attorney, Eric Kalanak, senior appellate attorney for the DA's office. Malm argued the local government code does not set a deadline for when a county judge must file his proposed budget, while Kalanak argued that because the code dictates a budget must be prepared in July, it's expected the budget will also be filed with the county clerk by the end of July. Johnson filed his proposal on August 6th, a day after Nodoff filed the lawsuit, though Johnson had already indicated he would be submitting the budget that day before the suit was filed. Trotter did not give a final judgment on the case Thursday, instead opting to give each party additional time to review new information. Malm said that during the hearing he discussed a similar case and opinions from the Attorney General's office, which were not included in the documents he had filed. Kalanak will now have the opportunity to submit a written response to the additional materials, and Malm will follow that with his own response. Malm expects a judgment will be given shortly, but said he did not know what day that would be. Johnson said he believed Trotter had been prepared to make a judgment Thursday before Kalanak requested more time to review the new documents. He said the judge stated during the hearing that there was no precedent in the law that sets a deadline on filing the budget. Nodoff requested in her suit for a mandate to be set that would require the county judge to file the proposed budget by July 31st in future years. She previously declined to comment on the lawsuit in a statement to the Reporter Telegram citing ongoing litigation. Coronavirus. City reports three more deaths, 17 new cases. By Mary Deeren, MDEAREN at MRT.com. Three more Midland County residents have died of coronavirus-related issues, the City of Midland said Thursday. The 50th person to die was a woman in her 80s. The 51st patient also was a woman in her 80s who had underlying health conditions. Both women were being treated at Midland Memorial Hospital and died Thursday. The women's deaths were the first COVID-19-related deaths since Friday and the 8th and 9th this month. The 52nd Midland County resident confirmed to have died from the virus was a man in his 70s who died July 31st. He was being treated at Medical Center Hospital in Odessa and had underlying health conditions. Also on Thursday, the Midland Health Department reported it is investigating 17 new confirmed cases of coronavirus in Midland County, bringing the overall case count to 2,846. There are 919 isolated cases, 1,360 people have recovered, 370 cases are under investigation. There are 145 unable to locate or refused, according to the release. Thursday's new cases are reflective of lab results from August 12th and 13th, according to the release. MISD. Long staffer is district's seventh COVID case this month. By Stuart Doreen, SDOREEN at HurstNP.com. Midland ISD reported that a coronavirus case was reported Wednesday at Jane Long Elementary. The school district confirmed the person was a staff member. It was not necessary to close the campus, according to the COVID-19 page on the MISD website. The district reported that Jane Long's staff member report was the 38th confirmed case involving a Midland ISD staff member or employee. That list includes the Alamo Junior High staff member on Monday and five others from four campuses and central office earlier in the month. Midland ISD reports that each notification triggers a series of steps, which includes sanitizing and disinfecting, notification of individuals in close proximity, and notification to the health department. Anytime we become aware of an individual with a confirmed case who was present at public gatherings, such as board meeting or sporting event, we will also issue a press release. A press release went out after a confirmed case was reported involving a person who attended the June school board meeting. The district reported that the last time a confirmed case required a closure was July 29th, when there were two cases, staff members with Child Nutrition Services and the school plant. Midland ISD has set up a COVID-19 dashboard where the public can view cases that are reported to the district. There also are links to Midland ISD's COVID homepage, the Frequently Asked COVID Questions page, and the City of Midland's COVID page. Climate. High temperatures put 2020 in record book by Stuart Doreen, S-D-O-R-E-E-N at HurstNP.com. Today's high temperature is expected to reach 106, just another hot day during the hottest summers on record. The National Weather Service reports that the 100-degree days continued Thursday, with the 39th recorded this calendar year. This means 2020 already ranks fifth all-time in terms of the number of 100-degree days. The all-time leader was 2011, when there were 65 100-degree days. Should the thermometer hit 105 degrees or higher today, it would be the 11th day of 105 degrees or higher. That would tie 2020 for the fourth most. Again, 2011 set the standard with 18 days. Beyond Friday, the NWS calls for temperatures to reach triple digits on Saturday, Sunday, and then return to the mid-90s. The average high for this time of year is 94. What remains is the forecast. In the forecast is dry weather. Through Wednesday, Midland had received less than 6 inches of rain had fallen at Midland International Airport. That is 2.75 inches below the normal rainfall through August 12th. The NWS reports there have been 54 hundredths inch of rain since April 1st. Mass shooting. Shooting memorial details to be revealed. By J.C. Lewis, jacy.lewis at hurstnp.com. Odessa Arts is set to release details of the art piece that will memorialize the mass shooting that occurred in Odessa and Midland on August 31st, a year ago. The artist, design, and location will be revealed during a half-hour special airing 7 p.m. August 31st on Basin PBS, according to a press release. Odessa Arts has worked closely with the City of Odessa, the Odessa Chamber of Commerce, the Ministerial Alliances, and the Family Resiliency Center of the Permian Basin to assist in developing the following ways the community can participate in the observance. Community members will be encouraged to share stories, photos, art, and thoughts on social media Saturday through August 31st with Odessa Strong and A Time to Remember. The Public Information Office for the City of Odessa is producing a video to thank first responders for their efforts on that day. 32 yellow flags will be displayed at Memorial Gardens representing the victims, and the Odessa Strong banner will be on one of the bridges. In addition, 1,000 smaller flags will be available at the Family Resiliency Center, the Chamber, Odessa Arts, Connection Christian Church, and other area businesses. Community members can pick up a free flag and place it at Memorial Gardens. Residents and businesses are encouraged to place yellow ribbons on their doors August 24th through 31st. The Chamber will use a digital billboard to spread a message of remembrance. The community is encouraged to observe 32 seconds of silence on August 31st, beginning at 3 p.m. The combined ministerial alliances are hosting a drive-in prayer vigil at 8 p.m. August 31st at Connection Christian Church. This will be a socially distant event with masks. Various buildings and art will be lighted either yellow or blue for the week. Odessa's Quilters Club is delivering handcrafted quilts to families and first responders. The budget for the commission for the artwork is $300,000 and will be paid for with a combination of hotel occupancy tax and private donations, according to the release. Community members wishing to make a donation can call the Odessa Arts Office at 438-0588 or visit odessaarts.org.
Hello, this is April reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Friday, August 14, 2020. Gaining momentum. New signage was in place Thursday at the Midland Rockhound Stadium, which now is called Momentum Bank Ballpark. New signage is up at the ballpark. The new signage is in place and the name is official. Security Bank Ballpark is now Momentum Bank Ballpark. The City Council approved the name assignment in March, when Security Bank announced it was being acquired by American Momentum Bank. Security Bank first entered into a naming rights agreement with the city in 2013. American Momentum Bank will continue under the same terms of the sponsorship agreement, which runs through 2038, according to a press release from the city. The city-owned baseball stadium is home to the Midland Rockhounds, the AA minor league team of the Oakland Athletics. We are excited about the new name of the ballpark, and even more excited to be working with the same team of bankers we have grown to love over the years, said team general manager Monty Hopple in a press release from the bank. The team has a great relationship with the bank, and we are looking forward to continuing that and welcoming our fans back to the stadium for the 2021 minor league baseball season. The 2020 minor league baseball season was canceled because of the pandemic. Helping Hands receives another $100,000 grant. A Midland family has offered a second $100,000 matching grant for Helping Hands, according to an email from the executive director. If the goal is met, the nonprofit can help those in need through the end of the year, Mary Harden said. Most of the funds go toward rent and utility payments, she said. A different local family made two separate $100,000 matching grants since the pandemic hit, Harden said. Donations can be mailed to Helping Hands of Midland, 1301 Brinson Lane, Midland, Texas, 79703. KMB plans 24th Annual Trio of Gardens. The 24th Annual Trio of Gardens, which benefits Keep Midland Beautiful, is 1 to 4 p.m. September 13. Presenting sponsors are Carmen and Billy Bryant, Concho Resources, and Faskin Oil and Ranch. Tourists can view three Midland gardens and learn from gardening professionals how to adapt their landscape to the area's dry conditions. Those attending will be eligible to win a $500 gift certificate donated by Aldridge Gardens, according to a press release from KMB. Tickets are $12 in advance and can be purchased by texting TRIO 2020 to 44321 or at keepmidlandbeautiful.org. Tickets will be $15 the day of the event, available at each garden. For more information, call 688-7745. Pediatric clinics to be combined. Wall Street Pediatrics and the Midland Community Healthcare Services Pediatric Clinic will be joining together at the Midland Health West Campus, 4214 Andrews Highway, effective September 1, according to a press release from Midland Health. The clinic will be located on the third floor at West Campus. The MCHS Pediatric Clinic phone number, 699-4747, will be used at the new location. The MCHS Pediatric Clinic location on Delano Avenue will be closing. The practices of Dr. Irina Remsberg, Dr. Chandon Mazumder, Lori Benninghoff, physician assistant, and Marlena Flores, nurse practitioner, will join the team of providers from the MCHS Pediatric Clinic. The transition will allow for expanding the available providers and staff at a larger site, according to the release. Today in Texas history, 1 year ago, thousands of people packed a baseball stadium in El Paso to mourn the 22 victims of a shooting at a Walmart by a man who told police that he was targeting Mexicans. Today in history, in 1935, President Franklin D. Roosevelt signed the Social Security Act into law. In 2009, Charles Manson follower Lynette Squeaky Fromm, 60, convicted of trying to assassinate President Gerald Ford in 1975, was released from prison.
The Opinion Page. Opinion Extra from Ramesh Panuru with Bloomberg. Biden makes safe choice by picking Harris as running mate. Among that sad subset of people whose hobby over the last few months has been speculating about Joe Biden's running mate, Senator Kamala Harris of California was always in the lead. There's a reason for that. She checks all the boxes. Biden said he was going to choose a woman. The next logical question, once he made that declaration, was whether that woman would be white. So he more or less had to choose a non-white woman. A white woman would have been a disappointment to too many Democrats. That left Biden with a small pool. And there was another test Biden had to apply. He faced even more pressure than usual to choose someone who would strike people as a plausible president if he were to die in office. His age, at 78, he will be the oldest man to be inaugurated if he wins, obviously raised the stakes for his choice. But he also needed a running mate who was ready on day one because so much of his campaign message is about reassurance. He has been saying that his presidency won't be a high wire act or an ideological bender. His selection had to fit that theme. The criterion of experience in high office eliminated several of the contenders that had been generating buzz. Stacey Abrams was a state legislative leader in Georgia, but has never won a statewide race. Representative Karen Bass of California has no national profile. Neither does Representative Val Demings of Florida. Apply these criteria, female, non-white, plausibly presidential, and the field shrinks pretty rapidly to former National Security Advisor Susan Rice, Senator Tammy Duckworth of Illinois, and Harris. Rice might have had the edge if Biden had thought that he needed a running mate with a reputation for knowing foreign policy, but he probably thinks he has that covered himself. His own foreign policy background was one of the reasons he was selected to be Barack Obama's running mate in 2008, and Rice had no experience at all in elected politics. Harris had the most, and alone among the three had run for president herself. Harris is not an electoral powerhouse. When other Democrats in California were winning comfortable victories, she struggled in her 2010 race for attorney general. Her presidential campaign started out strong, but then fizzled. She hammered Biden over his opposition to busing in the 1970s, and then had to admit that she didn't want to bring it back herself. She pinballed back and forth on health care, but she still has the best political credentials of the group Biden was considering. In choosing her, the Biden campaign is acting as though it is comfortably ahead. It doesn't need to shake up the race. It needs to avoid big mistakes. That's basically an accurate assessment, and it pointed toward picking Harris. Given the circumstances, and especially the demographic pledge Biden had made, she was the safest option. And while there is much in her career to dislike, such as her atrocious record on civil liberties, it's worth taking a moment to appreciate the fact that a woman with black and Indian heritage can be considered a safe pick. Obituaries and death notices. Bertha Loretta Patterson Sharp was born on March 6, 1935 in Merkel to Virgil and Rita Patterson. Her parents preceded her in death. She is survived by her husband, two children, a sister, and several nieces and nephews. Memorials may be given to the Missions Committee of First UMC Denton, or to your own congregation, or to a memorial of your choice. Memorial services will be announced later. On July 30, 2020, Clifford Allen D. Miller went to be with his Lord and Savior after a brief illness. He was born on December 4, 1935 in Alice, Texas. He graduated from Williams Adams High School in 1953 and attended Texas Lutheran College, then graduated from the University of Texas in 1958 with a B.S. in Petroleum Engineering. A memorial service in celebration of Clifford's life is being held at St. Martin's Lutheran Church in Austin after COVID-19 restrictions are lifted. To honor his memory, donations can be made to the St. Martin's Lutheran Church. On August 12, 2020, Rocky Barrera passed away in her home, surrounded by her family. Rocky was born in Würzburg, Germany on June 14, 1973. Though she was born in Germany, she grew up in Grape Creek, Texas, where she attended school there, as well as San Angelo Lakeview High School. A celebration of Rocky's life will be held Saturday, August 15th at 2 p.m. at Ellis Funeral Home in Midland. All guests are required to wear a mask upon entering the building and are to remain on the entire time of the service. Charles Ford, 79, of Midland, passed away on Thursday, August 13th. Family services will be held at a later date in Chillicothe, Texas. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickleham Welsh Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Aurelia Galindo Urias, 63, of Midland, passed away on Tuesday, August 11th. She is survived by her husband, two sons, one daughter, her father, three brothers, four sisters, nine grandchildren, and two great-grandchildren. She was preceded in death by her mother. Viewing will be Friday from 9 to 9 with a prayer service beginning at 6:30 p.m. Friday evening at Heavenly Gate Funeral Home. Funeral services will be Saturday, August 15th at 1 p.m. at Heavenly Gate Funeral Chapel. Burial will follow at Serenity Memorial Gardens.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Odessa American for Friday, August 14th, 2020. Educators Tackle COVID Issue by Ruth Campbell. The top officials from Ector County ISD, University of Texas Permian Basin, and Odessa College talked about the challenges of educating our community during the pandemic during a Facebook Live event Thursday. Moderated by CBS 7 co-anchor Jay Hendricks, OC's Coffee and Community Conversation featured UTPB President Sandra Woodley, OC President Gregory Williams, and ECISD Superintendent Scott Murray. It has been challenging for our families, Murray said. He said last spring the district relied heavily on families to provide some instruction for their children, but now every teacher has got to be a user of technology. He said some teachers hadn't used their laptops in 2 years. Woodley said technology is easy to use with a little training, and UTPB, along with every other institute in the nation, is trying to keep academic progress going. Murray said there are benefits, too. One high school math teacher talked about how technology can be used to build relationships with students. Looking at medical data, Murray said the community is trending in the right direction for COVID-19 cases, hospitalizations, and people testing positive for the disease. We want those numbers to be as low as they can, and that's our community stepping up and doing what is right. Woodley said wearing a mask and social distancing are small prices to pay for community health. I know that it's hard for people to do that. I don't enjoy it either, but as we've seen, it works. And it is important for our economy to get back in gear and for us to get back to work and for our students to get back to school. And the way that we can do that is an inconvenience that can really make a difference and has already made a difference in our community. I think my message to the community is stay the course. It's irritating, but it's a small price to pay for the health and safety of the people that we love and our economy that really needs to get back going, Woodley said. Murray noted that Wednesday was the first day of school, and teachers, administrators, and students were doing what was expected of them and what was asked, which was most impressive. OC and UTPB start classes August 24th. ECISD has already reported positive cases. Our biggest concern, of course, and we're preparing for this, is how we handle the inevitable positive cases of COVID that happen among our faculty and our students and our staff, Woodley said. We want to make sure that we're diligent to use the best information we can and to provide support for those in our Falcon family who will have this. As we know from the data, most people who get COVID will be fine, but not everyone is in that category, and we care about everyone in our institution, so I think that diligence will pay off. Really, that's what keeps me up at night. I just want to make sure that we are doing everything we can do to support the inevitable course of the disease that will happen in all of our institutions, because it's happening in our community. Williams said he too knows OC will have positive cases. I think you need to get over that shock so that every time you get a case, it cannot make you immobile. It cannot stop you in your tracks. So one of our strategies that I talked to our team about is, for the most part, and there are exceptions, is what if we start to think that everybody that you interact with could be COVID positive. If you do the right things, follow the right protocols, you're okay. So you're not shocked when someone calls, when HR lets you know, or when the contact tracers let you know that you've been exposed to someone. You're prepared for that news. It doesn't knock you to your knees. You were treating almost everyone outside your bubble, you were treating them as if they were COVID positive anyway, and that person didn't have a chance to impact you. So we're trying to set that example. We're trying to prepare our people, he said. OC faculty returned to campus Thursday and is going through protocols and training, preparing them for the inevitable. We get to do what they were born to do, what we're excited about doing. We get to engage with people, either online or face-to-face, or both, and it's an opportunity, and we're excited about that, and we're going to do it the right way, Williams said. Murray agreed with Williams' point that people should assume everyone they interact with could be COVID positive. Medical advice given to the district shows that wearing a mask and face shield adds an extra layer of protection from the virus. One of the cases we saw yesterday was a symptomless individual, and the only reason this individual discovered that they had the virus was they were doing a routine test in preparation for some surgery, and lo and behold, you have the virus. Zero symptoms. Zero. But if that person had not been protecting themselves the way that we had advised, then we would have had a group of students exposed. Sports. Woodley said the Lone Star Conference, of which UTPB is part, voted last Friday to move all fall sports to spring except for cross-country, tennis, and golf. Spring's going to be busy. Most likely there will be fewer competitions in every sport to be able to fit them in, Woodley said. She added that the athletic directors in the LSC will be working on models to get that done. The hope is that the seasons will happen, but just a little later. Williams said the National Junior College Athletic Association also has moved its fall sports to spring. It's a waiting game. We have students in residence halls that we have to deal with and make sure they're distanced and safe. This delay gives us some space in that regard, but those are some of the things we're thinking about, because it's not only on the field, it's when they're in the dining hall, it's when they're in their room, it's when they're doing the social gatherings in their own small groups. We're encouraging them to create their own bubbles, but we also know that they're social people, and we have to continue to coach them, Williams said. Murray said high school football is still on for now. The University Interscholastic League, UIL, which makes the rules that govern sports and band, for example, has the starting date for football practice for September 7th. The soonest games could start is after September 24th. But we'll see. The medical situation will drive what that looks like from community to community and across the state. But all sports, all UIL activities have been pushed to the earliest start of September, and then we'll just wait and see what happens beyond that. Band and cheerleading and other things that are a part of the Friday Night Lights experience, they'll be adjusted. Our band directors have been thinking about possibilities, what a high school band experience might look like, Marie said. Our two high schools put 350 kids at halftime on the field. You can't do that. So they're making different plans as to what halftime event would look like, or even in the stands, to have all those kids side by side in the stands, what that experience would look like. So lots of innovation happening right now, he added. If ECISD band were to travel to Midland with proper social distancing, it would take 82 buses, which Murray said would be expensive. We will not be traveling this year, he said. As for testing, Woodley said they will follow Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, CDP, guidelines, and local directives. All of our athletes, however, they do have to be tested, and our international students have to be tested as they come in, she said. In fact, our international students have to quarantine for 14 days as they come in, but we won't be testing, but we won't have mandatory surveillance testing for everyone. We will take advantage of the testing capabilities of our partners to make sure that we have tests for our Falcon family as we need it. Caring for students. Murray said the district recognizes that many parents need their children to be in school or in a safe location where they can keep learning. It's part of the balance between keeping our kids safe from COVID-19 and balancing that with making sure they receive a quality education. Yesterday, we had 4,200 students physically present in our buildings. The vast majority of our kids were at home yesterday, and for many of them, a mom or dad or grandparent or someone had to be with those elementary or middle school kids. We know that's a hardship. But when we look at safety, that's where we need to be in our community. In 2 weeks, we will bring in another 4,000 to 5,000 students back to our campuses, Murray said. This will give us almost 10,000 students face to face. We'll see how that goes, and then we'll bring another phase back. But 50% of our families have told us that they would like to keep their kids at home right now because they're concerned about the health and safety of their own children. He added that ECISD recognizes that not having parents at work is a hindrance to the local economy and that parents are making significant sacrifices. But we simply cannot put 30 kids in a classroom. It's just not safe to do that right now. And we're going to have to work with our parents, Murray said. Williams noted that a lot of people don't think about the school district having custodial responsibility for students. Struggling students. Woodley said UTPB has prioritized teaching some courses in person where possible. We make sure that we pay attention to progress for students who may be struggling, she said. We also have an alert system when students aren't making it to class, when they didn't finish their test, or they made poor progress on their test, so we can triage those students who are struggling more, Woodley added. Williams said OC already has some supports in place. The learning management system, Blackboard, we apply that to all our courses, whether it be an English course, a math course, a nursing course, auto diesel. You have a presence on Blackboard. So if you have to separate, if we have to stop, you still have that connection. That's one of the best things we've done. Another thing we've found that is a tremendous advantage is our 8-week terms within our semesters. What that allows is for students to concentrate on or only have to take 2 courses at a time. They're learning in smaller chunks, Williams said. Support systems. Woodley said UTPB has mobilized a lot of sources for students who have needs. We have an emergency case management system for students, and that could be for anything from technology or their transmission went out or whatever happens, or they need technology. We're thankful for the Federal CARES Act. We've been able to use some of that for this purpose. We've had really generous donors step up and provide dollars for these emergency resources, Woodley said. Shout out to Libby Campbell and the West Texas Food Bank and others. They are doing yeoman's work. We know they are to help feed students who have food insecurity, Woodley said. Campbell is the executive director of the West Texas Food Bank. Williams said OC students have benefited from a number of people and programs that Woodley mentioned. In addition to that, we have a program that we call OC Cares. We know a number of our students are disadvantaged, and we know a number of them have struggles and difficulties in their lives. So we also have a food pantry that we put in place pre-COVID, so we were ready to roll with that. We continue to offer students that assistance. Also, CARES funds have really helped. We have a program where students can apply to us if they have certain needs, and then through our student services and other people, we're able to help them. It's been very beneficial, Williams said. The school district kept students fed throughout the summer, and now every child is provided with a free breakfast and lunch 5 days a week in school. Curbside service where parents pick up meals also is provided for students engaged in remote learning. Computers also are on order, although delays continue to occur, and broadband service through grants is being provided for qualifying families through June 30th, Murray said. Our kids are living through a trauma with COVID-19, and as a community a year ago, we experienced a pretty traumatic situation with the mass shooting. Our families and kids in particular are going to experience some trauma. They are right now, and we will, and making sure we're providing support, so counseling services are available for families right now at any of our schools, Murray said. Woodley said UTPB also is investing in mental health resources and counseling. The economy also has been an issue. We have students who their financial plan to finish college was interrupted when sometimes both of their parents lost their job here in the Permian Basin. And so finding those extra scholarship dollars to allow them to continue has been ongoing, Woodley said. People are stressed out. And mental health has been a real challenge in higher education and everywhere else. We don't have enough resources to manage all of that. We were struggling before. We have really worked hard to increase the opportunities through telemedicine and other ways and other counseling services so our students have somebody to talk to, she added. Coffee and Community Conversation is a weekly panel discussion on topics of current interest and impact. Subjects covered in recent weeks have ranged from social and political trends and the role of law enforcement to changes in the educational system to the COVID-19 virus and its impact on local, state, and national communities. Swanner Running for At-Large by Michael Merlo. Denise Swanner said that she's running for Odessa City Council's at-large position because she's always served the community in other ways, and now she has the time and wants to make a change. Being raised here, I'm familiar with our city and all the challenges and good days, bad days, she said. I just feel like I can make a difference. While Swanner has never run for political office, she's been involved in numerous boards, including Main Street Odessa, before it was Downtown Odessa. She is the current president of the Parks Foundation and also works part-time as the assistant court coordinator at Odessa Teen Court Incorporated. She said that if she is elected, she will let her term run out in November as the Parks Foundation president, adding that working part-time will allow her to put in more hours for city council. Swanner said she worked in the medical field for around 20 years before she brought the Wiener Schnitzel franchise to Odessa and then sold it after 8 years to another franchisee. She added that she's also been the president of the Junior League of Odessa and the Rotary Club. She spoke about her different positions and learning curves she's had to overcome going from the medical field to the restaurant business and volunteering. That's one thing I can bring to city council. I've been an employer, I've been an employee, and I'm a volunteer. I won't ask you to do anything I won't do as far as working hard, so I got it from all angles, and I think 35 years of experience, that's pretty dynamic to be able to bring management skills, leadership, have a passion, and a vision for the city. She said that one thing City Council has done well is with the hotel-motel tax and bringing in the new convention center and the Marriott. I know it's kind of at a standstill with COVID-19, but hopefully that will get back on track and that will bring lots more money for the city. I think they've really worked hard as a team. You haven't seen that in a while, she said. She applauded council on how they communicate with one another and said she wants to be a part of it. I want to be right in there. I want to see what's going on behind the scenes because I know things are happening and I want to be a part of the decision making, she said. Swanner said she wants the whole city to grow because she's from Odessa and so are her children and grandkids. Really, I just want to be the voice for the people, she said. I want the citizens to be able to contact me, feel comfortable, hear what they have to say, and then I want to be pretty much a vision for the future. All those skills and the vision, she said, will make her a good city councilwoman. I just have a passion, and I want to see this city grow, be successful. I think you have to have a passion for it. I've never thought of anything being thankless because we're always here for a reason and a season to accomplish a mission. Swanner said that she originally was going to run for District 2, but after she began getting signatures for her petition, she noticed an error in the district map and called City Secretary Norma Grimaldo and then reportedly went to the elections office where she found she couldn't run in that district because she lived in District 4. She detailed in a previous OA article. That's why she decided to run for at-large, she said. She spoke on city council term limits, saying that our mayor, David Turner, has said he's going to run for at-large. That is a little bit strange to me because you've been our mayor for 8 years. What is it you haven't accomplished, she said. He's had his term. They have term limits for a reason. The term limits are 8 years, so why would you demote yourself? Turner officially filed Thursday afternoon, and previous District 1 Council member Joanne Davenport Littleton has also filed for the at-large position. Swanner said that although current District 2 Councilman Dewey Bryant has also termed out, his position is a little different because I feel like it's a move-up position being the mayor of the city of Odessa, she said. She said that things can get a little slow with the same people in city council and that she hopes to bring in new ideas even if she is running against people who have been on city council before. I'm just going to work as hard as they've worked and then some, she said. Want to run for city council? Seats open in the November election are districts 1 and 2 and the at-large city council seat as well as mayor. Deadline to file to run is 5 p.m. August 17th to finish required petitions, which consists of gathering 50 registered voter signatures in the area in which their position is sought or any Odessa registered voter for mayor or city council at-large. Who has filed? Mayor Dewey Bryant and Javier Jovin. District 1, Eddie Mitchell, Michael Shelton, Mark Mata, and Tiki Davis. District 2, Stephen Thompson. At large, Denise Swanner, David Turner, and Joanne Davenport Littleton. COVID-19 news by the numbers. Ector County total cases, both confirmed and probable, 3,716. Ector County negative, 16,689 out of 20,641 tested, with 236 pending, 57 deaths. Recovered, 2,930. Active, 729. Midland County. 2,846 confirmed out of 13,362 tested, 52 deaths. Texas, 506,820 confirmed with 4,549,474 tested. Total Texas deaths, 9,034. U.S. cases, 5,413,915 total confirmed and 170,352 deaths. Find out more at co.ector.tx.us or dshs.state.tx.us or the CDC site at tinyurl.com/TZTRJLF. Quick hits. Law enforcement fundraiser. The Odessa Police Department and Ector County Sheriff's Office will be selling raffle tickets for Support More badges from 8 a.m. to 2 p.m. Saturday at the Chick-fil-A located at 3805 East 42nd. Support More badges serves as an opportunity for children and families to interact with local law enforcement agencies. The event would act as the springboard for Bustin' for Badges, which is local law enforcement's annual fundraiser. Bustin' for Badges is scheduled for September 10th and 11th at Windwalker Farms in Stanton. The raffle tickets that are going to be sold during Support More Badges will be drawn September 11th. The top prize is a 2020 Polaris Ranger 570, valued at $10,499. Second prize is a diamond VIP package for a George Strait concert. And third prize is a Springfield M1A Scout Squad Caliber 308 Winchester. Raffle tickets are $20 each or six for $100. To register for the Bustin' for Badges, tickets, or for more information, call 335-3322 or visit bustinforbadges.org. Child Trafficking Awareness. A Child Trafficking Awareness peaceful protest has been scheduled for noon Saturday at Prosperity Bank, 620 North Grant. Masks and social distancing will be implemented. OC adds new vice presidents by Ruth Campbell. Applying a global approach to learning, Odessa College has added two new vice presidents of instruction to go with its vice president of instruction. Tremaine Anderson is the vice president for instruction, and Janice Hooks and Karen Doughty have been named associate vice presidents, Hooks for instruction efficacy and Doughty for operations. These are new positions. My role here is to support our vice president of instruction, Dr. Anderson, and to support and oversee our instructional schools, all of the deans in our schools, and to look at instructional efficacy, which is the quality of our instruction, Hooks said. Doughty looks at the operations side. So we're talking about processes, policies, interpreting some of the laws and mandates that come from federal, state, and local governments. And then how do we put those into practice, Doughty said. Anderson said, you do see operations in higher education, but efficacy is an OC innovation. It's pretty neat because you build models or systems that ensure the quality of instruction. So that's what I've been spending the last 4 months, well aside from COVID and our scenario building, looking at systems that ensure the quality of instruction. We're one of the top 10 colleges in the nation, but our goal for instruction is to be the number one instructional division in the country. So we have to prove that quality is there and keep it at that level of excellence, Hooks said. Hooks, who is from Prentice, Mississippi, was most recently at Dallas College for 6 years. She served as a dean for 3 years and got to work in instruction and student services. I wanted to move to a single campus, so not a huge district. I also grew up in Mississippi in a very small town, smaller than Odessa, so I was missing my small town roots, Hooks said. I love it, and I love the small town feel. I love it even though it's been the time of COVID. It just feels like family and people know each other in the community and know each other on campus. So that's what I was looking for. Doughty has been at OC for 8 years, serving as registrar for 7 years. This opportunity came along when the college was deciding to provide additional support for the VPI, vice president of instruction and kind of parse out some of the responsibilities to be able to support her or whoever filled that role. It was definitely something that intrigued me. My position also has to do with assessments and figuring out when students have learned what you intended them to learn and seeing the light go on in their eyes. That is by far the most rewarding aspect of teaching that any of our faculty will tell you. So helping the faculty know how to get that light to turn on, that's fun, Doughty said. Hooks said that combines famously with efficacy, because one part of efficacy is the quality of instruction and OC's capacity. But the other part is teacher efficacy, where they perceive themselves as good teachers. Whatever decisions they make about assessments or assignments in their class, they perceive that as why students learn, she said. One of the first projects Doughty said she worked on was looking at OC's academic facilities to make sure they had a plan for access, security, and air conditioning. Doughty also makes sure there are enough classrooms and labs for courses and looks at schedules to make sure they're not overlapping. There are so many aspects to operations and just making sure that the resources are present for the institution, for the students, making sure that classes are going to be held for the students and who's going to teach them and where are those facilities going to be located. Do we have enough space? It's an ongoing project, Doughty said. She said it's hard to pin down just one thing that she likes best so far, but working for the deans and faculty to improve the education of students is one item that comes to mind. Hooks said she is blessed to be in Odessa and at OC with the co-workers she has. Even though it's kind of altered now, it's truly what I thought it would be in terms of the culture of family. People really care about the students, and so I'm always in conversations about how will this impact the students, or is this the right thing for the students? I love being in that space, Hook said. She added that they have gotten a chance to work with academic success coaches. Student success coaches register students for classes, advise students on degree and career pathways, guide first-time students through their initial college experience, help with exploration of transfer and career opportunities, and discuss personal concerns, the OC website said. I enjoy that piece as well because I do have some experiences in student services. It's been nice to have that group. I've worked in several states and at several schools, and the people that you work with can make or break the experience. I just have enjoyed working with the people here, Hook said. Anderson replaced Valerie Jones, who is now Associate Vice Chancellor at Lone Star College, based in the Woodlands. Anderson said the shared leadership model is key so they can generate ideas. Anderson earned a bachelor's degree in history from the University of North Texas in Denton, a master's in history from the University of Texas Permian Basin, and her doctorate in education from Capella University. She has one daughter. Hicks earned her bachelor's degree in educational psychology and a minor in counseling from Mississippi State University, her master's in educational leadership from the University of Central Arkansas, and her doctorate in higher education with an emphasis on teaching and learning in the academy from the University of North Texas. I knew I wanted to help and educate in some way. If I didn't go into education, I would probably be a counselor or psychologist or something, but college really changed my life. I was a first-generation, low-income student, so when I went off to the big old Mississippi State, I was this little old small person in this big environment. But it really helped me blossom and start to understand who I was. I wanted to make that difference. So my first goal was to be an accounting professor. I changed my major from accounting. Then I did teach. Consistently, I taught for about 5 years, and I loved being inside the classroom. But I like creating programs and systems and processes a little bit more than I like being in the classroom, Hook said. Doughty earned a bachelor's degree in occupational education from Wayland Baptist University while in the military. She got a master's in education with an emphasis in teaching and learning from Touro University in California, and is currently pursuing her doctorate in higher education from Trident University. Dowdy always wanted to be an educator. Originally from a small town near Detroit, she served 21 years in the Air Force and was stationed in the South most of those years in Texas. She has a daughter who lives in Detroit. I used to play teacher with my brother in the basement of my home in Detroit when we were like 7 and 5 years old, and I was the teacher. I had been a secretary and had tried that at 2 different companies and tried going to school on my own, but I couldn't afford it. I was just barely making ends meet and taking one class at a time, Dowdy recalled. I knew it was not going to work out, and 2 things happened. One, I was broke and I knew I needed an education. The other thing was Desert Shield started up. I stayed up one night until 2 in the morning watching the news and discussing it with my then husband. Should I join the military? I felt this calling to serve, and as it turned out, they also had educational benefits, so it was win-win. I loved it so much I stayed in for as long as I did. I actually had a couple different jobs in the military, pumping gas on airplanes, and then I was a medical laboratory technician taking blood and analyzing body fluids and stuff. Then I decided again I wanted to go into education, so I ended up teaching medical laboratory to newbies and then stayed in the education realm for about 10 years doing different things, she said.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.